lived in Germany. He was a student of the Maharam Rutenberg, who is the end of the period of the Balei HaTosfos, who carried over all of the traditions, all of the shitas of the Balei HaTosfos, which were often very different from those of the Chachmei Sfarad. The Rosh writes in one of his Tshuvas that in his opinion, the Balei HaTosfos, he writes the Rian Rabbi Natan, but he means all of the Balei HaTosfos were greater b'chochma of a minyan than the Rambam. And he meant greater b'chochma minyan than all of the Chachmei Sfarad put together. And he thinks we should always paskan like the Balei HaTosfos. He usually follows the opinion of Maharam Rutenberg, his Rebbe. Once in a long while he will disagree, and he uses the expression that it's not fair to fight with the lion after the lion passed away. If you fight with the lion while a lion is alive, he'll rip you to pieces. After the lion is dead, of course you can fight and you'll win. So his Rebbe Maharam Rutenberg passed away. So he says it's not really right, it's not really fair. It's not fair to disagree with the major lion, with his Rebbe Maharam Rutenberg, after he passed away. But he disagrees. There are two famous halachas where the Rosh disagrees with the Maharam Rutenberg, both in Hilchas Avelos. Maharam Rutenberg, in addition to all of his tshuvas and his psakim, has a special sefer on Hilchas Avelos. Much of the Shulchan Aruch Yerideh is based on the Maharam Rutenberg's psakim in Hilchas Avelos. So the Maharam has two psakim, which the Rosh, both of which the Rosh disagrees with. One is there is a dispute in the days of the Gaonim whether a katan shehigia lachinuch, a child who's 10, 11, 12, old enough to understand what the mitzvahs are all about, and he has to observe all the mitzvahs mitam chinuch, would we encourage him to observe avelus or not? So the psak hamekubal is that there's no din of chinuch and avelus for whatever reason. Different suggestions are given why. The Gaonim never explain why not. But that's the way we paskin, that there's no din of chinuch and avelus. So the question is, what if the child becomes bar mitzvah in the middle of shloshim? There is a din of shmur kreiva. If a person finds out that a relative died within 30 days after the death, so then the relative who survived has to observe shiva shloshim, has to observe avelus. If he finds out after the 30 days after the relative died, that's called shmur rechoika, and he only observes avelus one day. So the Maharam Rutenberg had a chiddush that although there's no chinuch on avelus, and the child who is before bar mitzvah doesn't have to observe avelus right away, but if the case is such that he becomes bar mitzvah within 30 days, then he is obligated at that time to observe, to start the whole shiva, the whole 7 days of shiva, and to observe the whole shloshim. His shloshim will go past that of the other relatives. The relatives will terminate the shloshim after 30 days after the kvura, and one who has the shmur kreva begins shloshim and he continues on till later. So the Rosh quotes this in the end of Maseches Ma'itkotin, and that's where he writes that expression, it's not really fair, it doesn't make sense to disagree after the Rebbe passed away, but he gives a whole argument why he thinks that there's no avela. Since Bishas when the Avelus should have begun, the child was a katan and he wasn't obligated to observe Avelus, so he doesn't become obligated later. Then in Maseches Brachas, the Rosh has such a similar dispute with his Rebbe, the Maharam Rutenberg, also with respect to Aninus. The Mishnah, at the beginning of the third Perek in Brachas, says that Misha Mesa Mutalafon of one who was an Oinen before the Kvura is not permitted, that's how we understand the Mishnah, it's not permitted to daven, not permitted to recite any brachas, not permitted to observe any mitzvahs. It's a din midirabbanon, that the oinen is not permitted to observe any mitzvahs. So the question is, let's say the Kvura takes place in the afternoon, and the oinen missed shachris. So when he davens mincha that afternoon, should he daven a second Shmona Esrei to make up a tashlumin for the shachris that he missed? So the Maharam Rutenberg said lechumre that he should daven the Tfilas Tashlumin. And the Rosh disagrees again with him, and he thinks that it is not correct. It's interesting that Maharam Rutenberg was put in prison by the government and by the king of the country where he lived in Germany, just in order to hold up the Jewish community for ransom. And the government asked for a fortune of money. They knew that he hadn't violated, they didn't claim that he violated any crime. They just wanted the ransom money. The Rosh was a student of the Maharam Rutenberg. The Rosh happened to be a wealthy man. And he wanted to put up a fortune of money, and the communities put together all the money that the government wanted, and the Maharam said they're not allowed to redeem him. He instructed them, based on the Mishnah in Gittin, that it's not in the days of the Tanoim, and it was a common practice that pirates would kidnap someone and hold the family ransom, hold the Jewish community, hold the person ransom until hold them hostage until the Jewish community would put up a fortune of money. So the Mishnah quotes, they made a takonas chachamim that you're not allowed to pay more money than the person's value would be on the slave market. So the Maharam said that he prohibits the communities from ransoming him. And then he said, and even if he dies in prison, he prohibits them from redeeming his dead body. So as long as he was alive, they followed his instructions, and the Taka did not ransom him. After he died, one wealthy Balabas violated his instructions, and he paid a fortune of money to the king, and they redeemed the body of the Maharam Rutenberg, and that Balabas, even though he violated the wishes of the Maharam Rutenberg, he was later buried next to him in the Jewish cemetery. So while the Maharam Rutenberg was in prison, he didn't do any Yaveira. He wasn't a criminal. So they allowed the Talmidim to come and visit every day, and he gave a shiurim. So they quote in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Hilchos Shabbos, that when it was chilly in the prison on Shabbos, so the Maharam with the Talmidim would ask the soldiers or the prison guards that they should be kind enough to make a fire on Shabbos because they were afraid they would catch a cold. So this was permissible, even though we have a prohibition of Amira l'Nachri. We're not permitted to ask a Nachri to do Malacha for us on Shabbos. But the Gemara says that b'mokum choyle shein b'sakana, if a person is not able to function well, if a person is a choyle, so then we permit Amira l'Nachri. So the Maharam was of the opinion, not only if he already is a choyle, to prevent one from becoming a choyle, we also allow Amira l'Nachri. And Hakol Chayla Meitzal Tzina, everyone is considered a Chayla with respect to catching a cold. So that Psak and Shulchan Aruch is based on this historical background. Maharam Rutenberg was in prison, so they would ask the Nochrim guards in the prison to make a fire on Shabbos, which constituted a Malacha Deraisa, because to prevent them from becoming a Chayla, we permit Amira LeNochrim. So when the Maharam Rutenberg passed away, the Rosh realized that he was the most prominent rabbi in Germany. And just like they held the Maharam hostage to hold up the Jewish community for the ransom money, so he felt they're probably going to arrest him, put him in prison, and hold up the Jewish community for the ransom money to redeem him. So that's when he decided he has to leave. So he ran away to Spain with all of his children, with his family. They write in the history books that when he first came to Spain, he stopped off in Barcelona for a while, for a week, and he stayed by the Rajbo. Originally, they had corresponded with each other, and now he stayed by the Rajbo for over a week. And then at that time, he was offered the Rabbonis in Toledo, so that's when he moved with his family to Toledo. So in the Shulchan Aruch, they quote the story that when the Rosh came to Spain, he was surprised to see that the Balabatim wore an arba kamfis, a talis cotton that was made from linen. Strictly speaking, min haTorah, one is obligated to put on tzitzis on a garment that's made from linen, min haTorah. If it has four corners, you're obligated. The obligation to put on tzitzis on a silk garment or on a cotton garment, that's a machloikis in the Gemara, whether that's min haTorah, min derabbanan, a question of Shulchan Aruch, are we paskin? But the obligation to put on tzitzis on a linen garment, that certainly is an obligation min haTorah. Nonetheless, this is one of the instances where we pass on like Beis Shammai, against Beis Hillel, that they made a gzeira derabanan prohibiting putting on tzitzis on the beged shel pishtan, because in the days of the Tanaim they still had tchelas, and the tchelas has to be woolen strings dyed a specific blue shade, a blue color that has to come from a certain source, a specific source. In the days of the Tanaim they had fakers, that dishonest Jewish merchants who were selling imitation tchelas, which the Talmud refers to as kalahilon, indigo, has the same color as tchelas, but it's from a vegetable, it's not from a sea animal. So this is not kosher for tchelas. So the Gemara says, if you have, the tchelas strings have to be blue. So if you have blue strings that are dyed tchelas properly, tied onto a garment of linen, this constitutes shatnas, but the makam mitzvah is permissible. But if you have imitation tchelas, so you're not in the fulfillment of the mitzvah of tchelas, so you could have put on linen strings. You didn't. There was no need to put on woolen strings. So in that case, you'll be in violation of shatnas, because we can't say mitzvah sese is doicha, the mitzvah lo sese, because it wasn't really necessary to have the woolen string. If you really have tchelas, it has to be a woolen string. If it's not wool, you're not yet in the mitzvah of tchelas. But if it's imitation tchelas, you're not yet in the mitzvah of tchelas anyway. So then there was no need to put in the woolen string. So the Tanaim had a machlik is that you have to be concerned about the possibility that you're going to be falling in and putting on posel or tchelas. So we pass on the halacha like Beis Shammai. The Mishnah Masechah Shabbos in the first perek mentions that at one time there was a big vote, and the Beis Shammai outvoted the Beis Hillel on 18 gzeiros, on Yud Ches Dover. In addition to the 18 gzeiros that are listed off in the first perek in Masechah Shabbos and alluded to by the Mishnah in the first perek in Masechah Shabbos, the Rav Sadia Gaon writes in his Siddur that there are an additional 6 cases. Taisus quotes this from Rav Sadia Gaon Siddur, that there are an additional 6 cases where we pass like Beis Shammai. One of them is how many strings you put into tchelas. You put in 4 long strings which fold over to become 8, as opposed to Beis Hillel, who insists that you put in 3 long strings which fold over to become 6. So we pass them there like Beis Shammai. And secondly, we pass like Beis Shammai that there's a gzeira derabanan that you're not permitted to put tzitzis at all. Not only should you not put in tchelas, you shouldn't even put in lavan. You're not permitted to put any tzitzis at all in a beged shel pishton, because of the gzeira mishum kla'ilon. You may fall in, you may buy imitation tchelas made from the indigo, in which case you had no hetter to wear the shatnas. So the Rosh writes in his Tshuvas, and his son the Tur quotes this in Hilchas Tzitzis and Simon Ches, that when he came to Spain he was surprised to see a lot of things. He disagreed with a lot of the rabbonim in Spain about a lot of psukim and a lot of practices that they had. And he didn't consider them such big talmidim, most of them. The Rashba was outstanding, but most of the other rabbonim he did not think of too highly. So he was surprised to see everybody was wearing tzitzis in a talus cotton made from linen. Isn't the halacha like Beis Shammai? And after discussing it with the rabbonim in Spain, he finally came to the realization that they were right, that he was wrong. Why? Because the whole reason for the gzeira de rabbanon is because he may fall in and put in posel or tchelas. But during the lifetime of the Rosh, they had no tchelas anyway. Nobody was putting in tchelas. So the whole reason for the gzeira doesn't apply. So the whole gzeira doesn't apply. So the commentaries in Shulchan Aruch find this Rosh very difficult. Isn't it Shuvas or Rosh? They find it very difficult to understand. Because normally we have a principle that Dovish of the Minyan, Tzach Minyan Achal HaHatiro, whenever the rabbis instituted Gzeira de Rabbanon, so the Gzeira has to be observed, even if you live in a generation where the reason for the Gzeira doesn't make any sense at all, unless the rabbis will repeal the Gzeira. So there, nobody repealed this Gzeira. Beis Shammai made a gzeira that you're not permitted to put in tzitzis in a beged shel pishtan, in a linen garment. No one ever repealed the gzeira. So even though the Rosh lived in a generation where there was no tchelas available, and the whole reason for the hashash, the whole reason for the gzeira doesn't apply, but since it hadn't been repealed, so it should still be observed. So somehow the Achrayim assumed that the Rosh answered that, the Rosh in his tshuva writes the explanation, that he writes it over and over again, and usually he doesn't write so much barichas. So they assume that the Rosh was covering this point as well, and the interpretation that's usually given runs as follows. When the Chachamim make a Gzeira d'Rabbanan, so normally they don't incorporate the reason for the Gzeira into the Nusach HaGzeira. They don't want everybody to know that the reason for the Gzeira is XYZ, because then every Tom, Dick and Harry will say, I'm intelligent enough to know when the Gzeira makes sense, when it doesn't make sense, when it doesn't apply, I won't observe it. So then everyone's going to fall in. Everyone will think he's such a Reuber Chacham. Everyone will think, I don't need the Gzeira, doesn't apply to me. So the Gemara says, whenever they made Gzeira, they did not incorporate the reason for the Gzeira. So that's why the Gzeiras are always introduced, normally they're introduced as a Loi Plug Rabbanon, that even if you have a case where the reason doesn't apply, or even if you live in a generation where the whole reason for the Gzeira doesn't apply, the Gzeira still applies. This is patterned after the Dinim Deraisa, that whenever you have a mitzvah in the Chumash, even if the rabbis can establish the reason for the mitzvah, we paskin loy dashin in time of the krua. The mitzvah applies even though you have a situation where the reason doesn't apply. But once in a while in Chumash, you have a mitzvah where the Torah tells you the mitzvah and it tells you the reason for the mitzvah. So then the Gemara says, if the reason is incorporated into the mitzvah, so then if you live in a if you have a situation where the reason doesn't apply, then the mitzvah doesn't apply. So the same is true on the level of the Rabbanon. If you have a din mid the Rabbanon where they did incorporate the tam of the tam for the gzera into the nusach gzera, so whenever the tam doesn't apply, then the whole gzera the Rabbanon won't apply. So the Rosh, apparently, that's how the Achrayim assume, the Rosh is formulating a klal. Whenever the Chachamim make a gzera the Rabbanon to violate a mitzvah min HaTorah, telling you, do not put on tzitzis in a begim shel pishton. What do you mean, do not put on tzitzis? In the Chumash it says, you do put on tzitzis. So they make a gzera d'rabbanan to violate a mitzvah in the Torah. They have authority to do that. But in such a case, they have to incorporate the reason for the gzera into the nusach gzera. They're not going to incorporate it. So the gzera d'rabbanan is an outright contradiction to the din in the Chumash. So since the reason for the gzera must have been incorporated into the nusach of the gzera, so therefore you cannot say that this is a loy plug rabbanon. So if you live in a generation where there's no trailers, then the Rosh writes, then the Balabatim in Sfarad were right. Since the tam gzera doesn't apply, so the gzera shouldn't apply at all. The Rosh usually is known for just summing up the shitas of the Bali HaTesis. He was a Talmud of the Maharam Rutmer, who lived at the end of the period of the Bali HaTesis. There were yeshivas in Europe generations ago. In recent years it never happened, but generations ago there were yeshivas where they learned Gemara, Rashi, and Rosh. They didn't learn the Tosfos, because a lot of times you'll have a Tosfos that'll take you a while to figure out. Tosfos will ascertain a certain point in Jewish history that there were two people with the same name, two Rabbi Barbahanas. Or they'll try to discuss, which Rabbi Gamliel are you talking about? Rabbi Gamliel the first, the second, or the third? Or they'll talk about what's the meaning of a certain word in the Gemara. And it's really not relevant, halacha l'maisa. The Rosh leaves out all of these historical tesis. Well, sometimes tesis will reject a certain interpretation, and they'll spend a lot of time explaining why a certain reading, a certain girsa in the Gemara is not correct. A certain interpretation is not correct. And the Rosh will leave all of this out because it's not relevant halacha l'maisa. The Rosh gives you the maskonas of the Bali HaTosfos. He gives you the conclusions halacha l'maisa. And he gives you the arguments that are relevant halacha. So there were communities in Europe, even in Eastern Europe, where they only learned Gemara, Rashi, and the Rosh. They didn't learn the Tosfos. Because the Rosh is really sums up what the Bali HaTosfos say. And he ties up all the loose ends and he gives you halacha l'maisa. Once in a while, the Rosh has an original opinion. So those are often recorded in the Shulchan Aruch. They're usually accepted in the Shulchan Aruch. Just to mention one of them, which is relevant to us on our travels here. In the Mishnah and Brachas, there is a dispute among the Tanoim, a machlekes between a Abiyuda and a Chachamim, when is the last time one can daven mincha, and when is the earliest time one can daven ma'ariv. So Reb Yehuda is of the opinion that you have to finish davening mincha by plag ha-mincha, an hour and a quarter before the end of the day. Plag means half of the zman of mincha. The zman of mincha ktana is the last 2.5 hours of the day. You divide that in half, so plag ha-mincha means the last hour and a quarter of the day. So Reb Yehuda's opinion is that you have to finish davening mincha by plag ha-mincha, and that's the beginning of the zman of ma'ariv. And the Chachamim disagree. So many communities in America, we have the practice that in the summertime, and a lot of shuls, they'll daven on Erev Shabbos early, they'll daven ma'ariv after the plag ha-mincha. Because the Gemara says, regarding this dispute between Reb Yehuda and the Chachamim, that the machlekes was never really resolved. And the Ovid Kemar Ravid, whoever wants to follow Reb Yehuda has the right to follow his opinion. Whoever wants to follow the Chachamim has the right to follow their opinion. So Tosfos, so many have the practice that L'Kovid Tosefes Shabbos, Yibanim Mikal Shabbos early. So you daven Ma'ariv on Friday afternoon while the sun is still shining, as long as it's after the Plag HaMincha. Many shuls all summer long daven Ma'ariv all week long, Plag HaMincha. So the Rosh has an original chinish, which is mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. The Rosh is of the opinion that you can daven ma'ariv, well, you can only say Shema Esrei, but you can't say Kriya Shema with the brachas. So there are those who have such a chumrah. When they'll daven at an early minyan before Laila, they'll only say Shema Esrei. They won't say Kriya Shema with the brachas.
We are going to stop going to the banyo, to the servicios here, and it's a stop before Toledo, and they have also